Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland. Welcome to Rational in Portland. I'm your host, Kristen. And today I have Hassan Thomas here from the show Hassan Hates Portland. Misha Webley is the creator of the show, and he was on this podcast before, not too long ago, right before the show came out. And Hassan, I met you in a grocery store the other day, and you said I was the first podcast to talk about the show.
I think you were.
Yeah. And well, anyway, it made my year, so I'm just going to go with it. Okay. I'm just going to assume that that's correct. Welcome. Thanks for doing this.
No problem.
Thank you so much. We were talking offline a little bit about how you grew up, and I think it's really interesting that you grew up with a dad and a stepdad who were professional athletes.
This is true.
Yeah, tell us about that and what that was like.
It was great. I grew up with my stepdad. I didn't necessarily know my dad until later on in life. And kind of found out who he was and his story. But yeah, my stepdad played pro baseball. And that was great. We traveled around a lot. Met a lot of, just being in the culture.
Who did he play for?
He was with the Giants, the Braves, and the Indians. Sans now the Guardians.
Yeah.
Organizations.
And your dad played for?
My dad played pro football for the Cowboys, the Chargers, and the Redskins.
And he was instrumental in the Cowboys' first Super Bowl?
Yes, he was.
Amazing.
Yeah. He was kind of a bad man.
Rookie of the year.
Super Bowl MVP was rescinded, though, because he had a little bit of a contract dispute issue with the Cowboys. So they took that award back because he had boycotted speaking to the media.
Why?
In protest over his contract. So instead of holding out or things of that nature, he just decided he wasn't going to speak. But he showed up to camp, practices, games, performed at the highest level, obviously. But just had very little to say to the media in protest of his very meager contract.
What did he, when he was done with professional football, what did he pivot to?
He pivoted into a lot of different things.
That was his identity, right? A pro football player, probably?
I think if you ask him, that was just his, more of his ability than his identity.
Okay, well, that's good. So it was, do you think that made it easier for him to pivot to something else?
Yeah. I mean, he definitely had a lot of interest, a lot of different skill sets and abilities. He painted. He wrote. But yeah, I think he found it difficult. Yeah.
He found it difficult to transition
into another field. I think a lot of the reputation that the NFL had put on him, probably unfairly, followed him around. And so a lot of people felt that, in whatever sectors, felt that they had this preconceived idea or notion of who he was. You know, of course, he was painted out to be a troublemaker, you know, things of that nature. Just another black dissenting voice that, and especially at that, in that era, that period of time.
What period of time was that?
Nobody wanted to deal with. The 70s.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's pretty early. Did he ever talk about that to you? What that was like?
Absolutely. Yeah. We talked a lot about how our lives, even though we didn't know each other, I met him. I found out about him when I was 23, and we met when I was 25.
How did you find out about him?
I was talking to a friend of the family, one of my grandmother's friends, after my grandmother had passed, and she had asked me how my father was doing, and I replied, and she replied,
and
no,
you
no,
thought
no.
She meant your stepdad,
yeah,
but that
was like,
your...
No, no, I mean your real father.
Wow.
And I was like, wait, what? But I kind of knew, I had a feeling, so I wasn't super shocked when she said it. Yeah.
How did you know?
I don't know, sixth sense or something.
Wow. So then did she give you information that you could use to find him?
She just said, you should probably talk to your mom.
Okay.
So I did.
How did your mom take it?
And she was quiet for a second, and then she gave me a little bit of information. I just said, you know, how do I track him down? What's his name? All that. She's like, well, he may not want to engage with you. And I was like, that's fine. At least I'll know. And then I can move on. So, yeah, I called him and we got along swimmingly.
That's so wild.
So we talked a lot. Yeah, it was like finding a missing link.
That was your, I mean, it was probably clear to you, like, yes, this is my dad.
Like, we're, yeah, clones.
Mm. Does he look like you?
Yeah.
God, that must be weird.
I would say, yeah.
So do you, how often do you talk to him?
He passed.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, almost a year ago.
Still pretty new. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That was tough.
Yeah.
That was my person.
You must have felt really cheated out of all this time.
We had an amazing relationship, connection, communication for the time that I did know him. So, you know, I mean, it was, what, a little over 25 years that I got. So it was, but yeah, we talked all the time about everything.
What kinds of things, I know you were an adult, but what kinds of things did you feel like you learned from him or from that relationship?
I feel mostly that I learned how to accept and settle into who I am and what I am. And because up until that point, I always had a fairly strong sense of myself, but it always seemed similar to my dad. It seemed to be in conflict with, you know, the status quo, you know, just the norm, the way that people are, life is, society. You know, I guess you would call it, in short, I had a very alternative mindset and personality.
What do you mean by that?
How would I describe that? I mean, there are so many ways. I mean, an easy way, a very surface way of describing it is, you know, I was the black kid that listened to rock, alternative,
dressed different,
skateboarded, did all the typical things, but then did all the non-typical things. I was into art, I was into poetry, and...
did you paint
just
too?
Just a sensitive kid. I drew.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, very sensitive.
In what way?
To anything in life that I perceived as unjust, or, you know,
How would you respond?
Unfair
to that.
I always did the best that I could to, I guess, by today's standards and terms. I was the kid that got along with everybody. Like, I had friends in every group, goth, you know, Heshers, skaters, jocks.
What's a Hesher?
Rock.
Okay.
Rock, yeah, hard rock kids.
Okay.
You know, a lot of gay friends.
Did you feel like you
I was probably
float?
A very, I was very, call me the OG ally.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what period of time are we talking about here? That can help with context.
I guess like in my youth prime, like 80s, 90s.
Yeah. Is that, what is that? High school, junior high school?
Junior high, high school, young adult.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like you could, we talked about, I think as I said, as NPR would say, code switching, but I think that's because that's how I learned the term. But did you find that you could sort of seamlessly float through these social groups?
Absolutely. I was multilingual.
Yeah.
So I knew how to.
And your dad was like that then.
Yeah, very much so. My stepdad was too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In what way? Like, what? How did your stepdad? How did that manifest in your stepdad?
My stepdad, I think as well as through playing professional sports, you have so many people within that culture, like from different cultures, from different, you know, factions of life that you have to deal with. Like your teammates can be from anywhere. So that alone, you know, kind of forced you to be in like this United Nations state of mind. And then through that, you know, just the access that you got to different, you know, people, different cultures, different people, music, foods, things of that nature. So I think that was kind of cooked into, you know, just who they were as people and why they were able, part of why they were able to, you know, achieve what they, you know, and reach the level that they were with, you know, within their, you know, their professions and their interests, because you had to be open, you know, in order to deal with all of the things that were coming at you, all of the people inside those organizations and those institutions as well as outside.
What kind of music did you grow up listening to?
Everything.
What did you ever... Like, I had cassette tapes that I broke because I listened to them so many times. Did you ever have anything like that?
I grew up on vinyl. I literally grew up in front of turntables.
Okay, so did you have any records that you listened to so many times you just ruined?
Jimi Hendrix, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Black Sabbath, The Beatles, a lot of obscure stuff, too.
Like what?
Groups like... psychedelic rock groups like Gong.
Oh, I don't know them. Okay.
Who's other? Huh, I mean, Jethro Tull's more of a known one, but yeah. Tom Scott, Bob James, but heavy into psychedelic rock, funk. You know,
early everything.
R&B, funkadelic. It's putting me on the spot.
Like I know, but it's interesting. That's a lot.
Like literally everything. And then I just continued it as I grew up listening to, you know, anything punk, post-punk.
What do you listen to now?
Still everything.
What is there something that you have on heavy rotation?
I listen to a lot of oldie.
Yeah.
Old head stuff.
Like what stuck around?
But I would say what's Schoolboy Q is on my heavy rotation list right now. So that's newer.
I don't know. What genre is that?
Hip hop.
Okay. Is that what, circa what?
Like literally.
Oh, right, just brand new. Right now. How did you find it?
I don't know. I'm always, what's the term?
How do you find new music?
Always digging in the crates. Yeah. I'm a lot of my friends, a lot of homies are DJs, musicians.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because you did...
a lot of the KMHD crew. That's KMHD.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
When we were offline, you said you did some music writing and production.
Yeah, my early years, teens,
yeah.
Early 20s.
Yeah. But then you felt like you didn't continue with it.
Yeah, I think I was a little too idealistic in my approach and what I wanted and expected out of it from myself, as well as just like the industry at large.
What did you want from it for yourself?
Well, I think for me, a lot of what I wanted was how would I say this? I guess I would just say it. I think what I wanted was for almost like for music to be a vehicle through which people like MLK, Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, Huey P., for that to be a vessel for those types of messages to continue, and really for a way for society to clean up its act and get its shit together.
Do you feel like you've been able to do that through the Hassan Hates Portland show at all?
I hope. I mean, it's early. We're just starting. But also, you know, I had a lot to learn. I had a lot of growing up to do. You know, for as well-meaning as my intentions were, there was still just like a lot of, you know, young, brash naivete, and I dare say even ignorance on my part of just like having a more comprehensive understanding of the nuances of how the world and people work, you know. And
like what?
I definitely, for me, it's really easy to come in just straight to the point. No filler.
Yeah.
Tell it like it is.
Yes.
And
I got that impression.
And me being hard-headed, it's, you know, it took me a long time. And I'm still, you know, it's probably a lifelong process of working on and understanding, like, everyone isn't at the same place.
Do you mean you need to do some kind of hand-holding before you get there?
Or just, yeah, even being better, like,
restrain
not even
yourself
to be so
somehow.
Condescending to where others are in relation to yourself, but just being better at reading a room. Like, I can... I think it was the term, like, I was too much of a troll. Not that I think that that's a horrible thing, because also I think that people need to be challenged on, we all do. Just challenged in any and every way in terms of who we are as people, how, you know, how we're changing, evolving, whether we're doing this in mature, intelligent ways or very self-serving, you know, egotistical ways. But I definitely would come in hot a lot and just like, this is what I think, this is what I feel, this is what I see, this is what I know, this is what I believe. And not that I felt like it needed to erase or replace what other people's views were. I had always hoped that it would just more accentuate, you know, and complement where people were at and would help them grow and learn. But, you know, it's an interesting thing when you feel like you're doing that for yourself and you're being that way, but, you know, life always calls you on, hey, are you following the same, you know, the same advice that you're doling out? You know, are you walking the same path, or are you just telling other people what they should be doing, you know? So I don't know. It's I'm still figuring it out.
But yeah, that's a complex. That's a complex set of ideas. Mm-hmm. And you have to figure out who you are, right? Then
I think kind of the cheat code for me, or like the revelation, was, oh, I don't have to figure out who I am. I've always been who and what I am. I need to accept it more than search for it.
Okay. When did you come to that conclusion?
I think I've had little micro revelations, you know, over the course of my life, but it's built to a stronger sense of knowing that and realizing and accepting that over the course of time. But as we spoke about, you know, off air. When it really hit me, excuse me, a lot of things really came into focus after I awoke from surgery after trying to take my own life. And yeah, it was, I don't know, it's like a light went on. And it's just a matter of like truly moving into the space of acceptance rather than just saying it as a term, an idea, performing it, you know, as an act. And really just leaning back into and settling into, okay, this is the present moment. This is what's happening. This is where, you know, I'm at. This is the best that I can identify, you know, without assigning my own thoughts, perceptions, you know, ideas upon, you know, projecting that on other people. Just like, let me take in to the best of my ability, like the purity of each moment and where, you know, each person is, and truly figuring out how to work, you know, with that person, any person in any situation, whether, you know, regardless of what it is. It didn't have to be, you know, some monumental task or thing that we were trying to achieve. It could just sit around having coffee and just figuring out how to settle comfortably and authentically into a moment without feeling the need to project your ideas, or, you know, being this like this silent competition, you know, or combat with people, you know, over what you say, how you look, what you do. It's like, I get it. This shit is hard. So why make it more difficult by not being, you know, as forthcoming as we can be about who we are and where we're at, how we're feeling, and what we can do or not do to help each other have as pleasant and as smooth of a moment as we can without constantly bombarded by this persistent tension.
Pressure,
that,
too.
Yeah, pressure that we're always seemingly trying to avoid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. My mind goes a lot of different places.
I'm sure.
It's a interesting horse to try to tame.
Do you feel like you're still navigating that? Like post, or was the show, was filming the show helpful at all?
Yeah, working on the creation of the show was helpful. Then taking the step to filming it.
Because that's what a lot of that is about, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You, and in some weird way, to when I watch the show, my subjective experiences, like it's, yeah, it's about you, but mostly it's about you getting wrapped up in all these other people's bullshit, really.
Mm-hmm.
And like how you react to it or not, mostly not. I mean, there's not, that's part of why I think it's funny, because they want you to do things. They want you to say things, or they, I mean, that's my sense of it. When I'm watching it, I'm thinking, okay, this character wants him to behave in some way. And you're just, I mean, this is, I don't think I'm talking out of school here. Like you, this is how you are in real life. You're very, you're quiet and you're, there's a lot of eye contact. You're intense without being intense, but like it's if people want you to behave a certain way and you're not doing it, you know, some of these characters, like they get upset with you, or they just continue down some terrible trajectory.
Get you throwing darts
and you just let them do it. You just let them, you just sit quietly and just watch them do it. Or sometimes you leave, you know, you're just like, I'm not getting wrapped up in this. And you leave and they just continue on because this is their way of existing or whatever.
And that was something that I learned, because I definitely have a portion of me that is not quiet and has plenty to say.
Mm-hmm. But you managed to do it all in that show without saying very much at all. Like you don't have a lot of lines.
Definitely in the show.
Yeah.
I think the show
speaks brilliant
to an evolution of even the Hassan character taking on the philosophy of, and, you know, shut the fuck up.
Yes, yes. That's the subtext, like certain, the whole time. Like
people aren't ready to hear certain things, or they don't really want to. They might say they do. They might say they're here for it. But then, you know, when you actually call them on it, it's like, wait a minute. Like, I was just kind of counting on this to be, you know, more of a performative moment, you know, for me,
right,
for you to play your role.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You're off script when you do that. You go off script and they can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, this is all very meta, it seems like, but yeah, it's kind of fun. I mean, that's why it's fun. I'm sure. I don't know what is that like acting out this and maybe watching. I don't know. Have you seen it since? Do you watch yourself? I don't know if I could do it.
Not a great deal.
I do
though, because I'm so new to acting.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it's more of a study.
Sure.
And self-critique.
Okay.
Like, okay, how am I doing?
Yeah. That's hard. That's hard
but
to
also,
do.
I don't want to, you know, it's, I also don't, like, there's a balance.
Uh-huh.
Like, of course, there's a portion of taking this craft serious and learning and understanding, you know, how to get better at it. But also there's that portion where I just kind of want to do it and then
be done with
it. Let it be, yeah. Let it be what it is. And anyone can decide for themselves, like, you know,
what they want to get out of it.
Yeah, what they want to get, yeah, what they want to extract from it.
That must be so, is that weird performing this character that it sounds like in some ways is or was you.
Yeah.
Somebody's knocking at the door, but I'm not going to answer it because I don't know who they are. How do you, because you figured all this out before the show, and that's part of what the show's about, right? But then it's almost like were you drawing from scenes in your own life?
And it's definitely a culmination of just experiences from my life, Misha's life, and really anyone that we've talked to. And the funny thing is, like, of course, it's obviously and specifically about, you know, a character who is Black in Portland.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's no need or, you know, way to shy away from that, and not that I would want to. But I also think it's, I think what resonates is that it reminds me of something that my dad told me. He always hits me with these gems. And one of the things that he said to me that clicked with me was, son, relationships are about principle, not people. And I find that in the series, why it's relatable to people is because of its principles. So you don't have to be Black necessarily to understand what's going on, you know, or to connect or to relate to it. If you're principled, you know, in your approach, in your thinking around it, then it's an exercise in education, you know, and life. And I think it's varied in a way to where there are many things you can take. Like, yes. I've watched episodes and gone back and taken different things from the episode each time, you know, each separate time that I watch it.
When was the last time that you did that, and what did you see that you didn't see before?
What was the last time that I did that? I can't. It's probably been a couple weeks.
So not long.
Not long. But I think kind of speaking to what I was just saying is, I think it's really easy to get sucked into this is Portland, and this is Black people in Portland, and yeah, this is white people in Portland.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I think what I find myself looking at a lot is, you know, how am I conducting myself as a person, as a Black person in this space? You know, what am I giving? You know, what am I sharing? What am I holding back? What am I not sharing?
What's conscious and unconscious?
Yeah. Or even, you know, when we talked about, like, it's easy, and where there's an abyss of stories that we can tell that are just like basically Black white anecdotes.
Yeah.
But you know, I go back to when I first moved here, and I knew nothing really about Portland.
And you moved here from Phoenix.
Phoenix, Arizona.
'98.
I got here in the summer of '98, and I left the airport, took the bus, hopped off at Pioneer Square. And the first Black person I saw was dressed like MC Hammer. To
With hammer pants and everything?
To the T. Hammer pants, glasses, parts, like...
Okay.
The top.
Yeah, the top. Mm-hmm.
And I just humorously thought to myself, like, shit, what did I get myself into? And just...
Did you know about Portland before then as the whitest big city in America?
All I knew about Portland, and I considered myself relatively well-rounded. And, Oregon and all I really knew about Oregon when it came down to it was like Oregon Trail.
Sure. Dysentery.
And then I was like, wait a minute, don't they have good weed there? So I realized I wasn't as sound on my knowledge of Oregon or Portland. But yeah, I got here and... For me, it was just looking around, like, one, where are the black people? And then as they started to surface, I was just like, okay, not in some hostile or negative way. I'm like, but they're weird. They're different than how I move.
Yeah, like, how would you fit in? How do I fit in here?
Mm-hmm.
Who am I?
Yeah, I had to figure out, like, well, how do you crack the code of... entering into, being a part of the black community here, and where are they, and I had moved to Northwest,
Okay. Are we talking about, we're not talking about Chinatown.
No, we're talking about
Uptown.
Northwest 23rd.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah.
In 98.
I mean, that's a great, great place to live.
Mm-hmm.
Was it fun?
It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Especially
a lot of time.
God, it was amazing.
It was beautiful. I spent a lot of time in Forest Park.
Yeah.
Moving here in the summer tricked me.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It tricks everybody.
Yeah.
That's how people end up here.
But I feel like the weather has gotten progressively worse.
It's two ice storms last year. That was rough for me. I can handle that, actually. I don't like being cooped up, but, like, I can handle that, but it's just the 9 months of unrelenting rain. I can do a downpour, like a Floridian or a Texan downpour. I can do that because it does end. But this sort of Chinese water torture of a drip and 40 degrees that never seems to end and dark. And it's just, I know it energizes people. It has the opposite effect for me.
I think I've learned to deal with it, but it is a bit like,
how do you deal with it? It is. How do you deal with it?
I don't know. Seems like maybe I haven't been doing the greatest.
Maybe I want to know what you're doing so I can do it.
Isolate.
What do I need to do? Forest bathe and forest park? Like, what do I need to do here? It's too wet. It'll be wet and I'll be uncomfortable. I'll have to put on like three things of long johns and all the gear, right? The PNW gear.
Yeah.
The Gore-Tex, if you will.
It's a bit like, I don't know, I would imagine it's like living on the moon.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably a great view, wonderful to be up
keep
there.
Keep your suit amazing, on. Keep your suit on. Don't take that helmet off. Literally, figuratively. So you're trying to figure out how to live in this culture, and you were on Northwest 23rd, which is pretty, I mean, that's nice. I think like nice Portland, but where do you figure out in that period of time, do you figure out where black people are? Where are they?
At the time they were in North, Northeast Portland.
And how are you are you able to connect? I guess is the next question.
I think I was able to connect through the remnants of me seeking out culture and just places to hang through music.
Hmm.
So
would you go see shows?
Even though I didn't, I decided, all right, I'm going to go in a different path. I'm done with music myself. In terms of trying to work in that industry, still, it's a, you know, it's just a great place to meet people.
Yeah.
Find out a lot about, especially when you're in a new place. Find out about the culture of the city.
So do you go to shows and meet people and be like, okay, where else should I go? What else? What do you do? Like, yeah. Where are you going? Where are you? Who else is there to listen to? Who else is good?
Yeah. So I connected heavily and pretty easily and quickly with the Portland hip hop culture.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was great. It was.
Is it different than Phoenix?
Yeah.
In what way?
Phoenix is more of, there was just like a lot of, Phoenix is what, in shorthand, to me, it's kind of like a wannabe LA. It's just like a lot of,
yeah.
The, I mean, it's sunny all the time. A lot of the, a lot of the culture there was, you know, somewhat tied to that gang culture, that gang mentality, you know, the border cartel type stuff. It's just, yeah, the Southwest is obviously a different place than the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
But then, there were elements of that here, you know, as well. But I think a lot of what, you know, I found, especially just being who I am and the way that I am, I quickly found that quirky Portland creative culture, the weirdness. Yeah.
Do you think you're would you call yourself a creative? You know, as in that part of that people group?
I mean, I like to just call myself me. I am or can be creative. I can, you know.
I mean, obviously.
Access those. Like, but again, I got kind of to reiterate, like, for me, it's, I think my philosophy is probably more about, it's what are my abilities rather than what is my identity. My identity is intact.
What are your abilities, do you think?
Probably whatever I set out to, you know, to achieve or accomplish. And some things I'm better at than others. Yes.
Yeah, what do you like? And what do you like and think you're good at?
All right. I see what you're doing.
What am I doing?
Well,
I mean, I think it'd be a hard question for, I mean, I guess I'd answer it, but take a minute.
I love art and all of its various mediums. I personally find it it comes really easy to me to brand things. Like to conceptualize.
You're a brand.
Brand build out.
You're a brand now.
I am.
What do you think of that?
It's
weird.
It's weird trying to apply that to yourself, and it's very new to me at this point. At least in such a direct and obvious way. I mean, part of how you move through life, networking, connecting with people in community, working, is, you know, there's always an element of yourself that's a brand, but
that's true.
I never really, you know, especially being older and existing in this, you know, current state of social media and things like that, where like now it's,
how old are you?
Literally everything is a brand.
It's true.
54.
And so do you feel, I mean, obviously social media is relatively new, even though they've all, a whole bunch of them have like popped up and are phasing out and whatever. That's true. I mean, but everybody's a brand, right? Everybody has a account. has, well, I mean, is curating themselves in some way, I guess.
Absolutely. So for me, it's just about, okay, what is your brand and how do you move that into the present state of reality?
Yeah, and we talked off air about how you do marketing work, and that's your background. That's your background, and you brand can take a brand and work with a client, and, like, figure out what they want to accomplish with it. Like, what is their problem, right? What's the obstacle, mm-hmm. and then what do they need you to accomplish?
Exactly.
What mediums? I guess media, do you feel, and maybe it's everything, maybe it's music, maybe it's like film or a short or commercial or a drawing, I don't know. What media do you think, do you prefer to use when you're thinking about, I mean, in your own head, maybe, like, what comes up visually, or what maybe do you create? Do you start by creating when you're thinking about how to brand somebody or something?
It's a case-by-case thing. It really depends on...
what's the product, I guess?
It's who and what am I dealing with, and what are they looking for, and what's...
But
to the best
of
my ability, where's the best place to start? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you build out from there? And, you know, how do you help drive them to, you know, their desired goals? And for me, I think the challenge in working in that sector for me has been that because I don't give such a congruent, you need to do this and then this and then this. I'm not very formulaic in how I do things. I'm very fluid. I can take something that you can present something to me in the moment that I didn't know about or wasn't aware of, and I feel very comfortable at being present with that thing and figuring out what that item needs right now in that moment, you know, or, you know, seeing, having a fuller vision, a bigger picture of what that is, and then, you know, reverse engineering that bigger picture, you know, into steps to getting there. And mm-hmm. I think that I like to joke that...
Does that come easily to
you? I'm like a black Rick Rubin.
I love
if
Rick
you ask
Rubin.
Me better enough, but... but yeah, it's like... It's just this interesting thing where, like... What was the guy's name? I just watched the documentary last night on, I think his last name is Howard, the first black Disney animator.
Oh, really?
That, you know, did all this amazing work, had his hands in all these things, but, you know, a lot of what he discussed was, you know, he contributed to so many people's success, to their learning, their growth, their abilities. And then they all went on to become big producers or, you know, having these illustrious, careers in the industry, while he would never get those opportunities. He just kept getting left behind. And, of course, all of those people who went on to, you know, do greater things happen to be white. And I can relate to a lot of that. I've had my hands on a lot of things with, you know, involving a lot of different people, a lot of different sectors. But then there's always something that someone finds to point out, like, oh, well, you don't have this experience, or or the way that you approach things, there's always a reason, you know. And I, you know, I don't mean to put that out there like, you know, I'm somebody's ultimate victim or anything, but it's just been an interesting experience, life experience thus far, of being brought in, being recognized for your talents and your abilities, being brought in for them, but then being carefully managed, you know, and controlled in these situations and discarded when people are done with you.
That sounds really shitty.
It builds character.
Yes, it does.
Strength.
Literally and figuratively, apparently. Yeah, it does. Yeah. So what can you, I mean, those instances don't sound like great resolutions to any of those projects. Like what, how do you harness, and maybe it's acting, I don't know. I mean, how do you harness these gifts? They're gifts. How do you harness them in a way that doesn't end like that? Or does it? I mean, can you do it? I don't know.
I mean, I think there's a point where you have to balance out your ambitions with, you know, your ability to just accept the reality and what things are going to be.
Is that part of not being idealistic? Like when you used the word idealistic or a naive, or is that just part of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just life.
It's just life. I mean, there was a point where it was like, all right, you say, how do you harness that? I mean, it ironically, weirdly, and wonderfully, that's what HHP has done. That's what Misha has been able to do, you know, in capturing it in this brand, so to speak, of storytelling.
And you started filming very soon after this suicide attempt.
Yeah, I don't even know that it was a week after. Yeah, at that point, I was just like, it's time to go. Let's go for broke, you know?
Why not at that point?
Why not?
And it's apparently
I'm
been
supposed
good.
To be here. So
yeah.
So let's figure out what I'm supposed to be doing and do it.
Do you feel like, I mean, it may be too soon to tell. Do you feel like acting may be one of those things? Or maybe it's just creating things, because you have a hand in creating the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of things, but, it's also, I love the show. I hope everyone else does. And I think that what I love about the show is there's a lot there. There's a lot that can be created from the show.
That's right.
You know, down to supplementary characters, you know,
100%.
That we can focus on and potentially veer off and, different
Explore
projects.
Explore that. Yeah.
So it's been, not to sound cliche, but it's, you know, in a way, this Misha, what he's created, his friendship, you know, his, you know, believing in me and sticking with me and for years and trying to convince me to act.
You've known each other 15 years. Is that what you said?
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, a long time.
A long time.
But he wanted you to act when he first met you.
Yep. That was the first thing he asked me.
And you just shrugged it off.
And I resisted.
Off.
Yeah, I shrugged it off.
But he's been needling you about that ever since.
The whole time.
Yeah.
The whole time. So, yeah, you know, after that incident, he, you know, of course, was tiptoeing around it. But I'm like, oh, you know, what? And he's like, well, I really wanted to start filming, you know, HHP. And I said, all right, let's do it. He's like, really? Are you, was like, yeah.
But you didn't tiptoe around it for long, because when we were off air and we were talking about this timeline, I mean, I might be remembering it wrong, but didn't you say one of the first episodes he showed you was the Your Life Matters episode that involves where people think you're, all these white people think you're committing suicide?
Yeah, so that it was an interest that, like, the
jump right into it.
Order of events was, like, so the first episode that he showed me when he came to me with the title and the concept was that episode, and that was before. That was before I
had, it was before
attempted,
your
yeah.
attempt. Did he know that you were struggling in that serious way?
Well, in comedic terms, yes, because, I mean, you know.
You have a dark sense of humor.
Dark sense of humor.
So does he. That's why it works.
But also, that's just a lot of what we had talked about, like, developing the show and the scripts.
That.
It was.
So you were developing the show.
The struggling was talking about how challenging it is to be black in Portland.
Yeah.
You know, or to be actually liberal in Portland.
What do you
open-minded in Portland?
Well, when you say actually liberal, what does that mean to you?
It means enacting what liberalism is to its core, rather than performing it to placate a personal brand.
But what is it?
I mean,
to you.
For me, it's what it is, but to me, being liberal is just being open-minded.
Yeah.
Like, I'm conservative on some issues.
Like what?
I don't know.
Really?
I might be conservative on something today and liberal tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Like, life changes. Days, moments move. They fluctuate.
Yeah, that's what makes things interesting,
I tend to leave myself open to being whatever I need to be.
Hmm.
And
now that, true to yourself.
And in that, it's like my identity is safe and sound. Now I'm just working with my abilities to move in and out of different environments, different situations.
Which it sounds like you easily did growing up. You had practice doing that.
It was hard. I had a lot to learn, and especially on my own.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like I grew up in a family where we talked about these things, or even growing up in a family to where I wasn't even supposed to talk about certain things with my family members, you know, in my community, let alone. So it was challenging, again, for me to find, you know, my place, because, you know, no matter what side I was, you know, communicating with, there was always, and I felt like I was always confronted with these rules and obstacles of, like, but we don't talk about this, or...
Growing up, your whole life.
Yeah.
So that's a good dress rehearsal for Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Which they want to, I think, here. I mean, we were talking about this offline. I don't think it's gotten worse over time. I used to love living here. I used to love it. I mean, before I go down that road, when you first got here and you were in Northwest, did you like it?
I did. I definitely recognize, like, for me, it's liking something doesn't mean that I have to like everything about it, or
no, of course not.
Agree with everything.
And you're not going to.
Yeah, man. I saw the shit. I saw the BS.
Yeah, but it was good. Like, I mean, in general, you were good. Things were good.
I was able. Yeah, it was new to me. You know, it was...
It was a like novel thing.
Captain Kirk on a new planet.
Yeah, but it may be in an interesting, exciting way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was born here. I'm native. I have... It's generational, but it's been bad. I mean, the last, I don't know, 5 maybe more years, probably more, not good.
And what way for you?
I think the first thing that was really hard was, and I didn't know exactly what it was. I mean, it started with meth, and then it was fentanyl. And I don't know that I knew it was fentanyl, and definitely there was the crisis of the mentally ill who couldn't manage, for whom life had become unmanageable and had no resources, playing out on the streets. That was my dad. And so seeing that here, and he's dead now, but was home, like that was him, was homeless, was severely mentally ill my whole life. And seeing that here was hard. I mean, it was everywhere. I mean, at some point I just felt like, and I feel that way now, I can't get away from it.
Yeah.
You know, like this neighborhood, this is a nice neighborhood, but it's everywhere. It's everywhere. I mean, we always know when garbage day is, you know, there's a Max stop, like there are trappings here. And it's not like, I mean, people might say, oh, you don't want to see it. You don't want to, I don't want to live. I've lived in that like my whole life. And now he's dead and you know, I will always be like sorting that out. That's going to go how it's going to go. But to watch people who I know are dads or husbands or grandpas or, you know, brothers, sons, whatever, just starting this podcast and talking to people and just getting involved in organizations where, there are people with family members who are alive or dead. And my sister's a homeless opioid addict. That's part. I mean, so there's a drug component there too. And none of us want that for them. And like, we know they wouldn't want that. Don't want that, but they're not in a position to get out of it. And we can't get them out of it. And so it just made me feel sad and hopeless and helpless.
And to be in a place probably where I feel like we thought, or weren't there resources, you know, the ability to,
a progressive
to address
place.
This. Yeah. To right. address this.
We care about it. Exactly. We care.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, so kind of a thing.
It's been very interesting living in a place that speaks on so many issues.
Right. Obsessed with it.
Allows so many things to break down into this state of decay.
Oh, I think race is one of them. They're obsessed with it.
Yeah.
It's all anybody can talk about. I mean, all of these things that we mishandle, in my opinion, so badly, but it's all we can talk about. And I mean, people must think that when you drill down on it, nobody seems happy with it. Like you do they do polls and people say things like, you know, we care the most about homelessness. We care the most about crime. We care the most about drug addiction. We care the most about Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. But how are they? And then everybody will agree it's not being handled well. We're not doing a good job with any of it, but nobody seems interested in doing anything different. I mean, and the people who are seem to be leaving, or they're in the literal minority, or they're too afraid to talk about it. Because it's disruptive.
Yeah.
And it's not how we're doing things. And then it just sounds like you're being negative. You know, you're down on Portland. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the good things. You know, why don't we talk about the nature? Or why don't we talk about the river?
You know, from the title of the show, I've had people say to me, yeah, I can't watch it. You know, just the title alone.
Too negative.
Yeah. And, you know, for those people who don't have a sense of humor.
It's funny.
Who don't, you know, you're liberal, but can't have, like, you've already made up your mind on what this title means, what the show is.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if liberal means open-minded and accepting.
Yeah, even knowing me, you know, and still having, like, the audacity to say it to my face, like, you know, oh, I don't know the title. Like, it's hyperbole. You know, it's satire. So it's a brand.
Yeah. You know?
Discuss what it is.
Yeah. You know, the media seems to have gotten it. Do you think?
I think so. Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
There's a few people that want to, you know, participate in, you know, the outrage Olympics.
Yeah. But, do you think most people here get it? I think they do.
I think they do.
And I think they like it. Like, I think it helps them relax. It helped me relax.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that part of what's humorous about it is people want to get it. People want, for as much as they've, for whatever reasons, they found it hard to lean into being actually actionable on their word rather than just speaking the words and putting out this banner, floating this banner out. But yeah, sure, everyone's interested in their own comfort.
Right, especially here.
And
yeah, we're all in bubble wrap.
It's hard to convince someone to engage in discomfort for the sake of eventually finding, you know, actual comfort, or just more sustainable, you know, more real, you know, a more real level of comfort versus just like the comfort of the bubble of your own privilege.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the show offers everyone an opportunity to approach it and engage in it in a way that it isn't so much of those hard, direct conversations that I've tried to have.
Yeah, it doesn't
with
feel
people
aggressive.
Or that, you know, a number of other people have tried to have.
Passive progressive, is that what you said before you started recording? Yeah.
So it has, you know, it is. It's sometimes, you know, your individual self can feel a little bit annoyed at having to placate people's, you know, egos and their fragility and their sensitivity. But
I don't know, at the end of the day, if it works, if you get through.
When it's all said and done, it's, well, what am I shooting for? Being annoyed?
Right.
An effective participant in moving the needle in the right direction.
And it seems like, unlike in the show, or probably your everyday life, just by presenting the show and stepping back, you don't have to be wrapped up in all their stuff. Although I'm sure people want to wrap you up in their stuff and their emotions and their, you know, it's funny. When I told people that I saw you the other day, somebody like really astute said, did you ask him if he's a registered Oregon voter? He said, I wasn't together enough. I should have done that. But I'm sure that people have these situations where they need to have you hear their emotional reactions to the show. What's that like?
Honestly, it's not even that different than
real life.
Real life is.
You know, Martin Luther King was a big reader.
Mm-hmm. kids. That was my personal favorite episode, by the way.
It's my kids' favorite.
So fun.
I have an 11 and 13 year old. That's their favorite. It's did that really happen to somebody? You or Misha, or did somebody come up with that?
We'll keep that in the box.
Okay.
But
well, that's good.
It's good stuff. To the point of people like finding their funny bone, their sense of humor. It's cool because people do approach me and less with like leaning into the comedy of the show. They're sure. Still a bit wary of
what do I do with you?
Yeah. Like,
how do I handle you?
I want to
connect with you.
Know that I appreciate the show. This is great, but I don't want to be a weird white person.
Am I doing it the right way?
Ends up in an episode.
You said that to me. We were interacting.
Yeah, it's literally comforting them. Like, you're fine. That's cool.
And that's what you. Then you also said, I'm sure I'm disturbing your evening or whatever. And you said, this is not like a lot of encounters I've had. And I thought, yeah, I can imagine. I mean, they're probably in it. Then you get real meta, right? Then it's an episode of an episode of a commentary on an episode. Like,
yeah.
People are, they're doing it, right? They're, now you're still the Hassan character. Post the show, but it's about the show, but it's the same concept.
Yes, but
that's wild.
Interesting that even for me and my own learning how to deal with this on the fly,
yeah,
it's understanding to not just view myself as a character and a brand. I mean,
yeah.
I'm still learning how to deal with other people, or just being present in that moment and understanding that regardless of what brought this interaction, there's still like, we're still just two people.
And this is a way you are indirectly, whether you want to or not, you're indirectly connecting with everybody who watches that show. And they feel like, I think it's an unsaid thing, but I think we all assume watching it that there's something about you that is that character, or that it is a piece. There's a piece of you there. And then I'm sure, I know this is true for me, like feel like they know you, or feel like they, or they want to know you. They know enough about you that it's likable, and they think it's funny, and they appreciate what you're doing, and they want to connect with you in real life. And like, there's this fourth wall, right? That they, I mean, it must be so weird for you. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but it's also, it's a way to, it must be nice to interact with people regardless of how they're decompensating or not in front of you, in a way that like you've put this piece of art really out there, and it's all continuing, kind of, right? Like it's real. Like they're trying to connect with you about it, but that in and of itself is its own performance. Maybe
it is. It's healing. Yeah, as we talked about, like I've been here for a while and I've experienced a lot of shit here.
Yeah.
And it obviously drove me to, as much as I was trying to fight it off and, always present, a strong exterior, it obviously was getting to me like a paper cuts.
Yeah.
Or water torture or whatever. It was. And it finally came to a nuclear point where I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I got to get out of here. I'm done. I get it. Life is cruel. People are cruel.
You're talking about exiting your life, literally.
Yeah. And And it went there, but I didn't complete it. And I woke up.
Did you know that you weren't? Was there a part of you who knew you were not going to complete it? Or did you really think?
I really thought.
That was it.
It was it.
You did.
And I was ready. But it didn't happen. And so, yeah, it was, I woke up. And of course, like, you know, there's a choice. What, I can do it again and get it right?
Right.
Or I can accept that I didn't get it right. And it's time for me to do what I've always wanted, asked, yes, or expected of other people to do, which is change. Change what you're doing. Change your mind. Change your views. Stop. Like, everyone else is out there struggling too, living life, having a hard time with the things that they're having a hard time with. I can't just take this so myopically, like, it's everyone against me. It's everyone is struggling. And sometimes, oftentimes, when we, you know, interface with people, it's struggle meets struggle.
Yeah.
And there was a point where I was like, I realized that, I remembered that, and it's like, all right, actually hold space for another person and where they're at, what they're coming to you. Like, you have the ability, we all have the ability to contextualize what each other is going through in life at any moment, and to service them with compassion and understanding, versus, like, kind of when I was going back and looking at these episodes and looking at myself and seeing the parts of me that it's just very binary. It's, you know, I'm mad, you're mad, or you're this, I'm that, and, you know, whose viewpoint and attitude, position is superior. And a lot of that, you know, just learning to be, like, I can be annoyed with things that I'm dealing with, but I can place it in a more humorous context, in a more compassionate, understanding, you know, space.
It's easier to swallow.
Rather than just being mad and, like...
Does it feel better? Yeah, does that feel better?
Yeah, the title of the show, to me, is making fun of...
You're making fun of yourself. Yeah.
Like, what? You're going to walk around hating everything and hating everyone? And sure, you can justify it.
And you really don't. Like, in this show, you're really... You're amused by some of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, until it gets, you know, until the woman calls her boyfriend, you got to get out of there. But, like, it's there's a lot of it that's amusing.
And even, like, the cringy stuff, it's always amusing.
Yes.
Like, I joke all the time that I'm like, in order to be black in this world, you have to be a comedian. Like, you can't survive this shit without
it's funny laugh or cry.
Because it's, yeah, every day.
Like, you can decompensate, like, or you can move through it.
Yeah. So I had lost that. Like, I had taken so many hits and taken them, perceived them in a way to where it started to amass into, you know, this tumor, you know, just anger and frustration and just, you know, blame. And that, you know, that's not to excuse or exonerate anyone from, you know, their part or their participation in any of it. But I, you know, I had to somehow be reminded of just probably what I feel is, you know, an amazing, one of the most valuable attributes is personal accountability.
Because you can't fix them. You can't fix those people. You can't change those people.
I can only fix me. And I realized that spending so much time trying to charge out into the world, into communities, and convince other people to fix themselves, it wasn't working, you know, and I was neglecting, and in the process, I was neglecting myself. You know, I had to sit back and call myself out on a lot of things. You know, it's just like, yeah, you're speaking, like your speech is lovely, you know, but are you a person of your word, or do your words and your actions align, or are they two different things? And calling other people out on being that way, or, you know, not finding that alignment, it doesn't matter. I can call out a billion people and it didn't do anything but serve to just make me more angry. The more people I found that I could judge in that way, you know, or perceive in that way, I was just adding to the sum of that anger instead of getting to a place where it's like, you got to call yourself out, you know. And again, something that my dad said to me, he's like, you can't identify anything you don't identify with. So if I can so confidently call someone out on, you know, this issue or that issue, it's because I'm familiar with it, because I know it personally. And have I addressed that and face that and within myself personally, you know, or am I just my own version of someone who's outraged, you know, and blaming and trying to cancel this or control that? So in that context, like, yeah, it was funny to me that, like, realize, and that was the thing that I realized when he told me the title, like, I'm like, you're making fun of me. That's the route. That's the route. He's like, yeah, you're just like always. He's like, it's funny. You bring up all these wonderful anecdotes and they're hilarious. So I guess let's make it a show. And I was like, shit. Like, you're right. Let's do it. And I think that was the path. I mean, the people that get it, I think that's what they get. It's like, who trusts someone that can't make fun of themselves?
I agree. Yeah, it's not attractive. It's not likable. No. People are more...
It's gross.
It's gross. People are easier to connect with. I think that's why everybody falls in love with those celebrities who are able to go on SNL and let other people play them, or to play hyperbolic versions of themselves and let everybody laugh at them, or who call them up and say, hey, I just saw so-and-so's impression of me and I thought it was great.
Yeah.
You know, instead of get pissed off or, yeah. So who do you like? Like, who do you think is funny?
Everybody.
Yeah, sure, but intentionally. Like, who, what, are there comedians that you like, or shows or movies or creators or, like, people whose sense of humor resonates with you?
Well, I love dark sense of humor.
Yeah.
I love Anthony Jeselnik.
Yeah, I do too.
I think he's hilarious. Neil Brennan, Dave. There's probably plenty I don't know by name, but I do. I love the craft and the vessel of communication that comedy is. I have one tattoo.
Yeah.
After I realized I was
too soft
to go through tattooing my entire frame.
You were going to tattoo your whole body?
I mean, I was going to get quite a few. I had a whole plan.
Wow.
But
what was your plan? Like,
They all started. I don't know that it would be that much.
Okay.
But
well, where is this? Can you tell us?
It's on my right shoulder.
Okay. In the back?
Yeah, on my back.
It's a jester. Painful place.
It's a jester.
Okay.
So I had.
How big is it?
Yeah, it's probably about the size of my hand.
It's pretty big. Would it take half a day?
Not even that long.
No. When'd you get it done?
I got it done on my drunken 21st birthday.
Wow.
A friend of mine did it. His dad's.
A friend of yours did it?
Yeah. It's bad. It's not the worst, but it's bad.
Okay.
But my whole plan, I had probably about six or seven that I'd planned to get, and they were all just jesters, just court jesters. Because I grew up loving comedy, you know, Pryor, Red Fox,
mm-hmm.
Eddie Murphy, probably all the guys that you probably couldn't play their material back today.
Yeah, Bill.
Because
Bill Cosby is included, mm-hmm. and all the canceled for other reasons. Yeah. But yeah.
But yeah, I just, you know, and again, a lot of like my introduction to comedy, being born in 70, was through vinyl.
Yeah, that's how I heard Pryor first.
Comedy
record. A record. Bill Cosby, too, a record.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So.
I see them from the library, which is also, like, weird. Nobody would do that today, but you could check them out at the library.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I mean, I have styles or, you know, comedians that I favor more so than others, but it has been and always will be such an important, you know, vessel for communicating truth.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably the only way that you can get away speaking in a more truthful voice and tone without causing a riot, even though now, you know, that it's, for a while, they seem to be coming after, you know, after the art form, the expression. But
what do you think of Chappelle?
I think he's great. I think he's evolved into, to me, what he was inevitably going to evolve into. I relate to a lot of how he thinks and speaks and tells his story. But also I don't follow anyone that closely or that deeply to where I feel like it's for me to make some concrete assessment on who and what they are as people. Like, I don't know. I don't know you. I'm getting a piece of what, you know, you've decided to deliver, mm-hmm. you know, to a public, you know, to the public's ear. And I get that it's also a brand, it's a product.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I was going to use that exact word, as your own brand, you see people doing that mm-hmm. with you, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, you must.
Yeah.
Or just making assumption about you and your life and who you are.
Yeah, even the way that someone approaches me, it's based off of what it's they've true. Seen. Yeah,
it's based off the show. Series. Yeah, that's right.
So
it's sort of one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the show's layered, nuanced, and complicated, and it's whatever their subjective experience of you is in that sure. moment, right?
But
do you get recognized all the time around town?
Yeah.
What's that like?
It's interesting. most people will approach me and say something, and it's cool. At first, when it first jumped off, I was a little wary of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think I told you earlier, it was, I had this tinge of resentment because it's like, I've been here so long saying, having these these conversations or attempting to have these conversations. And
now you guys
I've been treated like Kanye.
Yeah, I bet.
But, you know, so kind of like I was saying, it's interesting to see how people respond to packaging and product versus yeah. principle and person.
Honestly, has it taught you a lot about branding? It must have. Like, what's palatable? What yeah. people will buy, really?
And what's powerful?
Yeah.
Like, what moves people?
Yeah.
Right. So,
yeah,
being being a part of persuasive. As a brand and learning it from that perspective, but also being a person and learning that as my individual self and, how to move with that from all sides.
Yeah.
You know, in all angles it's pretty multifaceted.
Do you feel, are you an introvert? You must be. I don't know. I don't want to presume.
I mean, it's
very quiet.
It sounds great. I am, but I'm not.
I know. I know. You have a lot to say. And you've said it. Like, you're not afraid to say it.
I've said it. But there's all, you know, yeah, there's probably an element to me where I do, and we'll see where I get with this. I've probably always projected a certain level of seriousness, intensity, because of my views, because of my experiences, because of self-protection and preservation. So in that, like, I've chosen to be introverted in ways or in a lot of ways.
I think
short of saying, like, I'm in Portland because I'm weird.
Yeah.
I'm goofy.
I guess we all are.
I'm a nerd. It's complex. I'm a lot of things.
Right? Yeah.
I'm a lot of different things.
Sure. But I mean, do you feel depleted by being a brand? Like, do you feel, maybe even this conversation, I mean, do you feel depleted? Everybody must want things from you. They want things, you know, they want to connect with you, or they want to use your brand to do something with it, or they want you to do something with it. Or
again, that's no different than what my life experience has been like.
I just
think now it's, I'm in a better place, and together with Misha, we've found a better way to communicate, connect, and work with people.
So this is preferable. It must be.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
It's easier than being mad.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And hurt. It
feels better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people are more receptive. I mean, they are receptive mostly, I think. It sounds like that's been your experience. It's brilliant.
It's a brilliant show.
You're done filming. Season one, it's over.
Season two.
Finished it up, wrapped it up. There will be a season two.
There will be.
Okay.
To be determined.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
When, but yes.
And everybody I've talked to is really excited about it. I'm sure you hear that all the time. Like, when is there going to be more? When is there going to be? There was some sort of like collective like, aw, sort of on the YouTube channel and your... all the mediums it was released on, Instagram, whatever, where it was the last one, everybody kind of was want to see it be over.
Yeah, it's
kind of
wild.
It's wild. Like, it must be. Did you know it would be like this?
We knew there was something.
Yeah.
Like, even with, you know, the first iteration of it, we knew we had something. But
it was so smart to initially package it as that clip.
Yeah.
To put it out.
But we had no idea.
There was a frenzy though, but you must have known then.
We had no idea. It was because I guess accumulatively through across all platforms.
Yeah. What are the views?
The number is like 5-6 million.
Yeah. God, that's crazy to think that you got that many eyeballs on you.
You know, being ambitious. So, you know, we were like, okay, we can get 1 million, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been wild. And I don't spend too much time out in these streets of Portland.
Right.
But I have been making it a point to get out a little bit more. And as I've done that, the response has been pretty cool. It's been nice. So
Hassan Thomas from Hassan Hates Portland, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Kristen.